Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fatal Family Album by Joanna Campbell Slann, narrated by Amy McFadden. Prologue. The death of any member diminishes an entire community, but the death of a woman like Nancy Owens causes a collective gasp of surprise. Nancy was not the type of woman you'd expect to die in a random shooting. She was white, upper middle class, plump, and wholesome. A stepmother and wife in her 40s, Nancy had never been a leader, always a follower, except when it came to her love for her Hungarian heritage. There were rumors that she was the one who encouraged the mayor of St. Louis to connect with his Hungarian counterpart so that our town and Budapest could become sister cities. Beyond that, Nancy never distinguished herself, although many considered her the ultimate volunteer, a real worker bee. She had been involved in the Young Women Leaders, Zookeepers, and the vestry at St. John's Catholic Church. In photos, her face could barely be picked out in the back row. Surely you know someone like Nancy. She's the person who tries to bow out of the group photo, forcing someone to search for her and making everyone wait until she's found. She's the type who insists in standing where no one can see her. Nancy was colorless, odorless, and easy to forget. She had no kids from her first marriage. The divorce from husband number one seemed amicable. No one was surprised to hear her husband had gotten bored with her. Most people doubted she would ever marry again. When Bert Owens asked her to be his wife, people asked each other, "I wonder what he sees in her." After all, Bert was an attractive guy and a successful businessman, whereas Nancy Pirva Smith was a wee bit on the dumpy side and without any particular accomplishments to her credit. Although Nancy had shopped at my store, I didn't know her as well as I knew most of my customers. I'd been nice to her, of course, because I make it a point to be nice to everyone. We did have one brief moment when we connected. We'd attended a lecture on blended families. After the presentation, Nancy and I bumped into each other. We got to talking, and she asked if I had time for a coffee. Sensing she needed a friend, I made the time. I'd been right. She needed a shoulder to cry on. I heard all about the problems she was having with her stepdaughter. After we parted, as I was driving home, I counted my lucky stars that my second marriage hadn't turned out like Nancy's. My little blended family was doing just fine, whereas hers sounded like one of the levels of hell. So, when I heard that Nancy Owens had been murdered, shot in the head, while sitting in her car in a parking lot in Ferguson, I thought there'd been some mistake. "She was shot. You're sure?" I challenged Clancy Whitehead, my good friend and co-worker. "We're talking about the same Nancy Owens? The Nancy Owens who occasionally shopped here? You're positive that's the same person they found shot to death in Ferguson?" "Yes, indeed." Clancy nodded, causing her auburn page boy to swing along her jawline. "It's all over the news. I even turned on my computer and caught it on the news feed."
"Wow! Shot in the head."
I was so shocked that I dropped my mechanical pencil. Okay, maybe it was just being a klutz, or maybe I was simply beat. I'd been doing paperwork all morning, trying to finish up for our end-of-the-year accounting. This is the one part of running a business that I hated.
"Shot in the head."
Clancy retrieved my pencil from the floor. She's been worried about me returning to work so quickly after the birth of my son, so she's taken to babying me. I kind of like it. It's nice to be taken care of once in a while. Handing me the pencil, Clancy continued,
"Can you believe it? They're saying that Nancy was sitting in her white Mercedes in a parking space in front of a strip center, minding her own business, engine running. Some creep walked up, poked the muzzle of a gun through the open window, and shot her in the head, for no apparent reason.
The window was rolled down? You have to be kidding. Who drives to Ferguson and sits in a parking space with her window down when it's 10 degrees outside? Apparently, the answer to that question is, ding, 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 Nancy Owens. Clancy's arched eyebrow added a touch of sarcasm that wasn't lost on me. Was it a robbery? Not so far as anyone knows. The creep didn't even take the car. And get this, the doors were unlocked. I don't mean to sound cruel, but that's just plain dumb on Nancy's part. Clancy sank into the chair across from mine. Propping her chin on her hand, she sighed. We all do dumb things from time to time, but I have to agree with you. It does sound really, really stupid. There must be more to the story. And, of course, there was more to the story. Soon enough, I found myself smack dab in the middle of it. 1. The day before Nancy Owens died.
I can never thank you enough.
Over the phone, Bonnie Gossage's voice was husky with emotion.
I wouldn't have gotten my son back if it hadn't been for you, Kiki. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're holding him now?
Yes, the pediatrician just left. He says my baby's fine, but a little dehydrated. He lost an ounce or two. They're going to give him intravenous fluids. They wanted to keep him overnight, but as you can imagine, that was a non-starter.
I chuckled. Bonnie's infant son had been stolen from the maternity ward of Southeast Hospital. Not surprisingly, Bonnie was so upset and grief-stricken that she totally shut down. The authorities couldn't get any details from her. Because Bonnie and I are friends, I was tasked with getting Bonnie to talk. I was successful. Armed with that information and my own observations, I poked around a bit. One thing led to another, and then I had a hunch that proved correct. 2 hours ago, my husband, Detective Chad Detweiler, and his partner, Detective Stan Hodcho, arrested the abductor and recovered Bonnie's little boy. With that assurance from Bonnie that all was well, I ended the call. My husband, Hodcho, and my friend, Clancy Whitehead, were all beaming with happiness as we sat around my kitchen table. We knew what a near miss we'd witnessed.
This could have gone really, really wrong.
Hodcho shook his head, changing it to a nod of thanks, as Brawny, our nanny, poured him a fresh cup of coffee.
What if our kidnapper had panicked? That whack job could have decided to dump the kid. What if she had left the baby on a doorstep? In these sub-zero temperatures, that poor newborn wouldn't have stood a chance at surviving. But the abductor didn't panic. She didn't know we were onto her, and baby Gossage is fine.
My husband leaned forward in his chair and put a reassuring arm around my shoulders.
Thanks to Kiki. Thanks to Kiki.
Hodcho raised his mug of coffee to me. Clancy did the same. Detweiler pulled me closer so he could plant a kiss on my lips. I loved the affection and the accolades, but I couldn't shake my misgivings.
You don't look happy,
Clancy observed. She knows me too well. Now that the child was back in his mother's arms, I should have been relaxed, but a bone-deep fear had crept into my body. All children are vulnerable, in one way or another. You can never let down your guard. Oddly enough, once you have a child, you're immediately scared for your own life because you realize how dependent that baby is on you. The plight of Bonnie's kidnapped infant had cranked up the volume on my natural fears. Big time. All my nerves were raw as a peeled onion. This whole thing has been too close for comfort. My eyes filled with tears. It could have been Ty, my son, my baby.
But it wasn't.
Detweiler grabbed my shoulders and turned me a quarter turn to the right. He let go of me to point at a sweet bundle in a portable crib.
See? Look at him. Sound asleep. That's our son, and he's fine.
Yes. I got up and walked over to the portable crib. Gracie, our Harlequin Great Dane, was sleeping next to it. Instinctively, she knew she needed to guard the youngest member of our family. She raised her blocky head to stare at me and cocked one of her uncropped ears in a way that suggested, "Should I be worried?"
"It's all right, girl," I assured her, reaching down to stroke her silky muzzle.
Even as I said the words, I was struck by how fragile my son was. I stood there, mesmerized, watching the soft spot in my baby's skull pulsate with each beat of his heart. Detweiler came over to stand beside me.
"Come on, sweetie, let it go. You need to relax, Kiki."
This time when he pulled me close, I rested my face against his chest, as I so often did. I willed myself to release the tension inside. I focused on the comfort my husband offered. How did that blessing for newlyweds go? "May your joys be multiplied and your sorrows divided." Detweiler gave me one last squeeze and returned to his chair. As the lingering warmth of his touch faded, I lectured myself. "He's right. We are celebrating tonight. All's well that ends well. All three of my children are safe and sound, under our roof, with two parents who love them. We're surrounded by friends. I couldn't possibly want or need anything more." The buzzer on the oven startled me. Bronwyn Brawny McCavity, our Scottish nanny, had been in the family room, checking on our older two children as they watched Frozen. Now she bustled into the kitchen. When she opened the door to the oven, a heavenly fragrance filled the air. Wrinkling my nose, I picked out the individual scents: cinnamon, sugar, vanilla, butter, and a hint of nutmeg.
"What did you bake for me, Brawny?"
Stan Hodcho hopped out of his chair and went over to supervise. Ever since he realized what a good cook Brawny is, Hodcho has become a fixture at our house. He's especially likely to show up at meal times.
"You're getting scalped if you don't keep your hands off those cookies. Let them cool. Aye, and their spice bread too. Go sit down like a good laddie."
She muscled Hodcho aside as she expertly balanced the hot baking pan on top of four cans of soup. The air flowing underneath would help the cookies cool.
"That spice bread needs more time. I can tell by looking at it. Who wants a cup of mulled cider?"
Brawny slipped by Hodcho to reach into the refrigerator. After a chorus of, "Yes, please," she poured the golden apple cider into a pot and added an apple studded with cloves. Next, she tossed a pinch of spices into the mix.
"Cinnamon? Nutmeg?" I asked, following my nose. "Aye, perfect for the season, don't you think? In a tick, we'll have spice bread, mulled cider, snickerdoodles, and a batch of shortbread cookies I made yesterday."
"Any lemon curd?"
Detweiler asked hopefully.
"Of course we have lemon curd. What would you have me for, a heathen?"
Brawny fisted her hands on her hips. Typically, she wears a tartan skirt or black slacks with a starched white blouse. Today she was dressed very casually in a pair of jeans and a sweatshirt from Washington University, a local college. In the 7 months that she's been with us, she's slowly adapting to life in the heartland. For the most part, Midwesterners don't stand on formality, although areas of St. Louis could rival Boston with its preppy culture.
"Lemon curd, spice bread, cider? Good deal."
Hodcho rubbed his hands together as he returned to his seat.
"Sounds like enough to keep me going until dinner. What are we having?"
"Make yourself at home, Stan,"
Detweiler teased his friend.
"I intend to. How about if the four of us review everything we know about the abduction? I've got a steno pad in my pocket. After dinner, I can go back to the police station and write up the report in a jiffy. I don't know about you, Detweiler, but I hate working in those stupid cubicles. I bet the ladies don't want to make a trip to downtown Clayton just to give their statements either."
"Agreed," Clancy said.
I nodded, and Detweiler gave his friend a thumbs up.
"We're having beef stew,"
Brawny said, stirring the cider,
"with green beans almondine, crusty bread, and a garden salad."
"Count me in."
Hadjo rubbed his hands together with glee. The buzzer sounded a second time. The warm snickerdoodles were plated and set in the middle of the table. Each of us grabbed a small dish, a napkin, and a cookie. We'd just started work on the report when the doorbell rang insistently.
"I'll get it,"
13-year-old Anya called out from the family room. She and 5-year-old Eric were singing Frozen's theme song, Let It Go, a tune oddly incongruous given the news that Gossage Baby's kidnapper would surely face a long stint behind bars. Anya's soft-soled Uggs slapped their way to the foyer.
"Anya, you know the rules,"
Detweiler called out as he hopped up from the table. As Detweiler left the kitchen, Gracie got to her feet and trotted along behind him. Gracie rarely barks, as she relies on her size for intimidation. That usually works just fine.
"Anya, you know better,"
Detweiler warned, and his voice drifted back to us.
"You cannot open the door by yourself. It's not safe. We'll talk about this later."
Having a cop in the family is a constant reminder that bad things happen to good people and life isn't fair. A little caution goes a long way toward crime prevention. Even so, I could imagine the pout on Anya's face. A creaking of hinges and a rush of cold air suggested Detweiler had invited our guests into our home. A hushed murmur of men's voices could be heard, but I couldn't make out any specifics. We live in a house that was constructed more than 100 years ago. The wood for its frame was chosen piece by piece. The walls are thick and sturdy. I love this place with all my heart, and I feel safe here. Brawny poured hot cider into our mugs and set a plate of sliced spice bread in the center of the table. She took shortbread cookies from a plastic container on the counter and put them in a tea towel-lined basket for us. Next to the cookies, she set a small jelly jar of lemon curd and a knife for spreading the tangy confection. The murmur of men's voices in the foyer grew louder and louder.
"I bet that's the Center for Missing and Exploited Children's task force following up."
Hadjo grabbed a slice of spice bread and went back to writing in his notepad.
"Could be a reporter who heard how you tracked down the kidnapper, Kiki. It's not every day that a craft store owner doubles as a successful crime stopper."
Clancy was teasing me. Her lipstick left a crimson kiss on her mug rim.
Right. Ha ha.
I bit into a shortbread cookie that I'd slathered with lemon curd. Detweiler came back into the kitchen. The expression on his face was unreadable, the sort of blank mask he wears when he doesn't want to give his thoughts away. Behind him were two men in identical khaki trench coats. Their military bearing and short-cropped hair screamed law enforcement. The man in the front opened a leather wallet and flashed an FBI badge toward Hadjo, Clancy, and me.
"I'm Special Agent in Charge Brett Sanders. This is Special Agent Philip Montana. We're here to speak to Bruce McCavity."
"Bruce McCavity?" I repeated his question and glanced over at my husband. He was leaning against the door jamb. Detweiler's strange expression confused me further. Why wasn't he correcting the agents?
"You must be misinformed,"
I went on to say. I pointed at Brawny. "This is our nanny, Bronwyn McCavity. Maybe she can help you find the person you're looking for." Brawny stepped forward to face Agents Sanders and Montana. Squaring her shoulders, she wore a look I'd never seen before. It was as if she were being strangled by an invisible hand. Her voice trembled as she said,
I was Bruce McCavity."
2.
"Corporal Bruce McCavity, we need to speak to you in private."
Agent Sanders didn't ask, he demanded.
"Immediately."
Agent Phillips added his 2 cents. Clearly he was the second in command and a real wannabe.
We can use my office.
Detweiler tilted his head toward the hallway.
Sounds like a cue for me to leave.
Clancy's eyes were huge, crowding her eyebrows off her forehead.
Thanks for everything. Kiki, my coat?
It's in the foyer closet. I waited for her to collect her purse and led the way.
What in the world?
She whispered in my ear. I grabbed her coat from the hangers, positioning myself half in and half out of the closet proper.
I have no idea.
We stared at each other.
You aren't keeping anything from me, are you?
Don't be silly. You're my closest friend. I'm telling you, this is a shock to me, too.
Did we hear it right? Brawny might have been Bruce?
How should I know?
Maybe it's a Scottish thing, like here where girls get a family surname for a first name?
Maybe. Holding the jacket up for her, I watched as she wiggled into it. She whispered,
I'll expect a full report tomorrow at work, okay?
Of course.
I walked my friend to the front door, gave her a hug, told her to drive safely, and locked up behind her. Muffled voices came from Detweiler's office. I tiptoed down the hall and closer to the door so I could eavesdrop. The office is actually a space intended as a formal living room. After moving in, we decided there was no reason to invest in fancy furnishings, only to spend the next 20 years yelling at the kids to keep off of it. For the most part, our family liked to camp out in the family room and snuggle on its well-worn furniture. The pieces in that room were mismatched, so I redecorated them with cheap navy slip covers and washable throw pillows. Lord above knew how often everything got washed. In fact, I'd finally invested in a second set of slip covers because one was always in the dryer. Of course, originally, the formal living room was entered by walking through an open archway. That meant there'd been no privacy at all for anyone trying to get work done. One Saturday, shortly after we moved in, Detweiler and his dad built out the wall and added a door that could be locked, giving Detweiler a real office. Thanks to this ingenuity, he could review files pertaining to investigations without fear of prying eyes. Later, we added a combination safe and a gun safe. All of us played a part in transforming the space into a cozy office. One Sunday, Detweiler and Anya put together a trio of cheapo shelves from Target, and these lined the west wall.
Power tools are so cool!
Anya held up the electric drill for my inspection, although I wonder whether it was really the drill or the fact she was bonding with Detweiler, doing a project that the two could stand back and admire. Smack dab in the center of the room, an old desk floated like a proud island, anchored in place by a second-hand oriental rug I'd picked up at a garage sale for $30. The office chair was a cast-off I'd found in a Goodwill store. Directly across from the bookshelves on the east side of the room were 2 leather club chairs we'd inherited from Leighton Haversham, our former landlord. Leighton had been the previous owner of this, his family home, and he had graciously left the club chairs behind for us to enjoy. Those seats flanked a short wooden file cabinet, a real treasure, because the drawers could be locked with a key. Even Eric got in on the action. Brawny helped him take photos of the Missouri landscape. These she developed and framed. They took pride of place on the wall. Now all those efforts annoyed me because it made the room a perfect place for a confab. From my place in the hall, I could hear the intensity of the discussion. I resisted the urge to press my ear against Detweiler's door only because I feared getting caught. If I stayed where I was, I could easily pretend I'd just come from the kitchen, the hall, or the family room. But as it stood, I wasn't close enough to hear the voices distinctly. Too bad you can't hit the CC or the closed caption option in real life.
I shook my head in confusion. Had Brawny lied about her gender so she could enter the British military service? If so, how had she pulled it off? Did she have a twin brother? Had they manufactured a switcheroo? Was her first name really Bruce? Was it a Scottish thing, as Clancy had suggested? I mean, hello, Clancy's real first name was Drusilla. Maybe Brawny's real first name was Bruce. Then came a truly unsettling thought. Was it possible Brawny wasn't really a girl? That she was a he? Or even more unlikely, was Brawny transgender like Caitlyn Jenner? Nah, that was totally improbable. Impossible. She would have told us. Wouldn't she? Brawny's former employer, Lorraine Lauber, would have told us. Surely she would have. Lorraine inherited Brawny after her brother Van died. Van had been Eric's stepfather. He'd been the one to originally hire Brawny. Surely, if something was amiss, Van would have told Lorraine, and she would have told us. Surely. On the other hand, Lorraine had represented Eric as Detweiler's biological son, and he wasn't. Lorraine had also tricked Detweiler into bringing Brawny and Eric home with him from California. So Lorraine was not above pulling a fast one when it suited her. But did it follow that she lied to us about Brawny? Maybe lie was too strong of a word. Had Lorraine simply omitted this key detail of Brawny's past? Was Brawny a complete sham? A total fictitious human being? Was she even really a Scot? What exactly did we know about her for certain? We'd been told she was an accredited nanny, a graduate of a prestigious college for nannies, and a former member of the SAS, an elite military group. We knew, or rather thought, that she'd been born in Scotland. My head was spinning. It seemed like the universe was conspiring to make me crazier than a loon. First there was a baby's abduction, and now this. I stood pressed against the wall at the end of the hall. My eyes never left Detweiler's office door. By golly, as long as it took, I was going to wait for him to come out. Hurry up, Detweiler, I chided him mentally. What in the world is going on, buddy? Hodgeau must have been thinking the same thoughts. I'd totally forgotten about him after I got up to see Clancy to the door. Now he took a spot next to me at the end of the hall. The two of us stared wistfully at Detweiler's office door.
What gives? Is Brawny really a guy?
Although he'd spoken softly, his timing was unfortunate. Right around the corner came my daughter, Anya. She had been lured to the kitchen by the smell of food, but as I watched, she froze in place.
Oh, no,
I groaned. Kids have this uncanny ability to ignore you when you want their attention and to hear you very, very clearly when you'd rather they didn't. I could tell by the expression on Anya's face that she'd overheard what Hodgeau had said. Every stinking word. She went absolutely rigid. Then a slow red stain crept up her neck. That color change was the prelude to an explosion. I grabbed Anya by the elbow to hustle her into the kitchen. Fortunately, she was in such shock that she came along quietly. I guided her into one of the kitchen chairs.
Shh.
I put a finger to my lips.
Shh. That's all you have to say? Shh. Hodgeau says Brawny is a guy and you want me to shush? Is it true? Is she? A he? A drag queen or whatever? Did you know that? Mom, did you?
She spoke so fast and so angrily that I was left sputtering.
Honey, I'm as surprised as you are. I don't know anything about Brawny for sure. But I heard what those men were saying. They called somebody Bruce, and then Brawny started talking. I know her voice, Mom. There's her accent, too. So, Brawny is really a man?
I have no idea. I'll admit I was eavesdropping, too. How did you hear them? She rolled her eyes and threw up her hands in a duh sort of way.
Their voices came through the air vents.
You can hear everything that happens in Detweiler's office? Of course I...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?